I was just like, they brainwash people into thinking, or I don't see so much brainwashing as people are just desperate for any kind of improvement, quote unquote. Then they do the math and they realize that, you know, they're going to lose it all on healthcare concessions and probably other concessions that we're not even aware of, because there's always something pops up that turns out they gave concessions on. Now, I think a lot of younger workers are like, I don't need health. I'm not going to go to the doctor tomorrow anyway. Who cares, you know? But a lot of us, we have kids and stuff, you know? We're gonna lose our raise and then some. Yeah. And there's no need for it. This is where they should set the standard.
Well, even the young workers that have, that's a very dangerous mentality set.
Horrible, yeah.
You could prevent cancer, you know, because I don't need to go to a doctor. I feel fine. And tomorrow, whenever you could have prevented it, it didn't get prevented. Now the cancer is spread or whatever.
Well, you know,
just these little things.
The bourgeois, the ruling class in this country, they're not that smart in some ways, but in other ways they are when it comes to lining their own pockets and squeezing every bit
of
profit out of us.
They're cynically smart.
They're cynically smart. They went after pensions first in terms of if you want to line up sort of things to go after they've hurt American workers on, and other workers, of course, around the world. Is you know, pensions was an easy target because a lot of workers, that's too far away. They don't think of it. And the union leaders will pander to that and get rid of pensions in some cases. In other cases, it's the exact opposite, where they've got like a lot of older members and they won't do that right away. But so pensions are down to very few people have pensions now. I mean, in terms of real pensions, where the bosses, where the company puts money into an account that you're going to get later when you retire, instead of an account that either you have to put money into, like a 401k, or they put money into, but it's tied to the stock market. Oh, sorry, you're only going to retire with $10,000 because the stock market screwed up, you know?
Well, like the crash 2008, my cousin had $20,000.
Yep.
And his 401k with Rite Aid, you know, when he was the manager, whatever.
Yep.
And he lost $12,000.
There you go.
So he came out with, out of that $20,000 accumulated, all those years or whatever, you know, accumulated, gone.
Yep. Gone like that, and that's happened to a lot of people.
And that's from accumulation from the Osco drugs, when it was Osco's, Brooks, and then Rite Aid.
Yeah,
you know, because
is he still working there? By the way,
no, I think he works for CVS now.
Okay,
now I think Rite Aid got chewed up by or bought out by Walgreens.
Oh, really?
That's interesting. So all the Rite Aids are going to become, you'll see Walgreens. The transition.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
Yeah, Rite Aid is no longer.
Yeah, that's why people have to go back and read Karl Marx. Remember that famous name, Marx?
Big fish eats the small one.
Because he at the beginning of capitalism, he and others figured it out, especially him. It's the tendency towards monopolization is ever present in capitalism, ever present. Mm-hmm. And all the stuff about free markets, always been a lie.
And a 401k, had it been a pension, it would have been, he would have been all set, but because it was tied into the market.
Wait a second. Yeah, he should have been all set, but guess what's happening now, as you know.
Are they linking that up into the market?
They're tearing up pension agreements all over the place. One of the most famous ones was in Detroit. Public sector workers, already in retirement, are receiving pensions, all of a sudden are getting tens of thousands of dollars less through some agreement that some judge, of course, said was okay. So contracts that workers sign, that unions sign, mean nothing. But the contracts the bosses sign mean everything. You know, think about what the debt is in America. The debt in America is money owed to big banks. The so-called, you know, government debt that the conservatives go on and on about, also the liberals. And that money's nothing. You could just cancel that debt. Forget it. No, I'm not giving any more money to the big banks. They already suck out enough money, you know, in interest and everything else. No more money. If we get a real socialist government in someday,
it's like Iceland into the bank.
A real one.
Like, no, we'll just
The first thing would be we cancel all debts and we nationalize the banks. Later. See you later, capitalist pigs. Verizon workers on strike. 39,000 Verizon and Verizon Wireless workers are on strike against corporate greed. Some of those retail stores that a lot of people will see that have no connection to the labor movement don't know anything about Verizon or the unions, which, by the way, are the Communication Workers of America and the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers. Those are two unions that are on strike at Verizon. The 39,000 workers on strike belong to one of those two unions. They are not something you might not run into a picket line around a Verizon office or something, but there are picket lines you'll probably see around Verizon stores. And
So they're not going to the headquarters.
They're doing both. So I'm just letting people know that are listening. Check out your local Verizon store if you want to see Verizon pick it. Now here's the thing. You should support the strike any way you can. Do I have a way to tell you to support the strike? Not really. Like every stupid union strike, and I don't mean that this is a stupid strike, but what I mean is like every stupid union strike strategy, that they're still living in the past. You know, the unionship still thinks this is the 1950s in some little corner of their brain. They know it's not, but the little corner of their brain thinks it's the 1950s. We'll just throw up a picket line and that's it. And the workers will go to the picket line, they'll talk to themselves, and they'll get their strike pay if there's a strike. I don't think they have actually a strike fund. And wait a minute. No. You got to reach out to the public. You got to reach out to the unions. We need to have what's illegal, sympathy strikes. Or solidarity strikes, we would call them these days. We need to have every union go on strike in support of your strike, and then when we go out, you go out. They aren't even thinking about that. They just say, that's illegal. Sorry, we can't do that. Well, you have to do it to survive.
Mm-hmm.
You have to do it. If there's going to be a labor movement, it has to break the law. It's always had to break
the law.
Look
at how it's done in
Europe.
Unions
were illegal. Yeah, every general strike there is completely illegal.
Remember once, I went to the Azores. Remember I told you I've gone to the Azores before because, I have a friend that, has a house out there in one of the islands, and I go every so often, because it's not that far away from here. They told me, you need to get on this flight, and it's 2 days prior to, here I am 2 days less. But because tomorrow there's going to be a strike, and we don't know how long that's going to last. And I was like, really? So this is American next to me. Americans, and he's going, what do you mean? No, I still pay for this. He's being very arrogant. I'm going like, listen, just get on. We're going to get on this flight because, trust me, they do things differently here, and you'll be stranded. You literally won't fly because they're not going to fly. That's everything. Stewardess, the pilots, everybody's on strike. Everything. The people that fuel the planes.
Well, what I'm getting into is beyond that one. I understand what you're saying, but what I'm getting into is beyond one sort of industry, if you want to call it that, or one type of work. Verizon strikers need to be not alone. They need to have strikers from Harvard University, from wherever there's a union, from the building mm-hmm. trades. Everyone should go on strike. Yeah. That's called a solidarity strike, or if it spreads wide enough, a general strike. That's what we have to have.
We want to see how this is organized. This is coming through one union for the transportation of all. So metros in Portugal stopped. Mm-hmm. All the trucks,
taxis. Kind of getting close to what I'm talking about.
They're all under one union.
Yeah.
So that's everything.
That's kind of getting
close. That's transportation.
That's transportation general strike. Yeah, that's close to what I'm talking
about. You know how long it took them to settle? A week.
Mm-hmm.
They were thinking 2 weeks. In a week, the bosses were signing whatever they needed to sign and okay.
Well, there is a thing here that says, join picket lines and get the latest about how you can help. Now, you should do that. And members of Social Alternative are doing that. But I have to say, it's a little intimidating if you're a member of the public and you go up to this really clubby little picket line. And what I'm trying to say here is not, I'm not trying to blame the strikers for anything. I'm just saying, please, union leaders and strikers, think about your public persona. Think about your public, how people are perceiving you. You need to outreach to the public. Like, I went by a picket line yesterday, beat my horn, gave a thumbs up, a couple people acknowledged me. No, everyone should be acknowledging that. This is in a place where there probably isn't a lot of that happening. Secondly, you need to have a leaflet to give out to anyone that walks by or anyone that stops. Give them a leaflet about the strike and what they can do to help, right? You need to have signs that actually just don't say just on strike, but just explain the demands of the strike.
The bullet points.
The struggle. I heard Miles Calvi from IBEW, leader of IBEW, on the radio, and maybe it was because of the guy, it was a conservative radio station, but he wasn't getting out when I was listening the real reasons why people should support this strike. There was some general talk about, they're defending, and it's true, they're defending decent jobs, decent wages, because they get paid traditionally pretty decently, relatively speaking. And that's a big reason they're under attack, of course, is that Verizon wants to just drive them back down to the levels of non-union workers. Anyway, it says here, join picket lines and get the latest about how you can help. So we should all do that. www.standuptoverizon.com or call the Communication Workers of America local in your area. That's great. I'm just wondering what they're going to say, because all I've seen so far is sign a petition. But this also says go to a picket line, and that's true. People should do that. But just be aware that, you're going to have a couple awkward moments probably because the workers don't understand what they need to be doing, and the leadership's not telling them. You know, it's not a club. Unions aren't a club, man. Unions are a social force, and they have to reach out to the rest of society, of workers. And you can't, you know, you can't just be insular. You can't be huddled. The vision of a union picket line should not be a huddle like a football game. It should be a vibrant, exciting, angry line of people that are reaching out to whoever drives by, whoever walks by, and keeping scabs out, keeping shoppers out of those little stores, whatever it takes. And they should be joined. And again, and the real strategy is beyond that. The real strategy is spread it to strike to other unions. Anyway, let me just give a quick thing from the CWA here. Quote, 39,000 Verizon and Verizon wireless workers are on strike against corporate greed. Verizon workers from Massachusetts to Virginia are on strike because management refused to back off its demands that would destroy good jobs. What they're referring to here is outsourcing and so on. It says, so there's a little bit about that here. Verizon is a stunningly profitable and greedy corporation. I like that, stunningly, it's true, that cares nothing about consumers and workers. Their only objective is to line the pockets of the executives and drive up their Wall Street share price. The company's proposals could gut job security protections, contract out more of our work, so they're already getting contracted out, shutter call centers, and offshore the jobs to Mexico and the Philippines, and to freeze our pensions at 30 years of service. Why?
And they
Why are they going to freeze it? Oh, this is horrible. This is
you really know, I've noticed that when I had, I used to have Verizon for my internet provider, and every time I call for tech support, I know it's not coming. It's not somebody in the United States.
Right.
You can tell.
Now the union says, CWA says, if we don't agree to all these givebacks, all these concessions, the company insists on the right to transfer any employee anywhere for 2 months at a time. Can you imagine that? That's like you're in the army or something. I mean, hey, you're going to go to the Philippines now for 2 months. How can people afford that? What's that going to do to families?
What? They send you out?
And they refuse to bargain any improvement in wages, benefits, or working conditions. Now, the latest I heard on the radio is that the strike is having an effect and that Verizon has said, we'll give you a little bit of a raise. It's like a propaganda thing. We're going to go, we're offering them a raise. What are they on strike for? What's all this other stuff, too? You know? Here are the facts about the Verizon strikers. Sorry about the paper thing here. $39 billion in profits over the last 3 years. $39 billion, Verizon. $18 billion in profits, $1.5 billion per month in 2015, and $1.8 billion a month in the fourth quarter of last year. Sounds like Harvard. $233 million in compensation to the top five executives in the last 5 years. $13.5 billion in stock buybacks and dividends for shareholders in 2015 alone. That means they're just like giving money to the people that have shares, extra money. Yes, you don't have enough. Have some more, billionaires. And $38 billion in buybacks and dividends over the last 5 years.
Up how many houses do you need? How much? Can you actually buy?
Put 1 foot.
How much?
1 foot in your house in the Florida Keys and 1 foot in your house in the Hamptons. Does that even work? No, you got to be one place or the other. You know. See, we gotta do a census.
How much is
enough? We have to do a working class census. We have to go around the country. We have to organize a mass part of organizing a party for the 90%. And every city goes and does a census of the rich neighborhoods. Forget about the poor neighborhoods for a second. Let's go to the rich neighborhoods. How many houses are standing empty at any given time? Is that mansion that you drive by and always look at, like I do? I look at that stuff. How many rooms are empty in that place any given day, even if the owner's there, when the owner's not there? And then you know what we're going to do? We're going to take them over. It's going to be Donald Trump's worst
public
nightmare.
Public domain.
Donald Trump's worst nightmare. We're going to say, look, no, you own too much property. You own too much. We're sorry. You can have a good life in your mansion down in the Florida Keys, but this one up here, we're taking for the homeless people.
It'd be like what the Chinese did in the beginning of the revolution. You got a big mansion.
I have a real life story about that.
You're telling me about your friend who said it wasn't this. The rich just lost everything. They said, yeah, guess what? We'll take your mansion. You have a right. You were telling me about it.
My friend whose parents lived through it said that what happened was is that the, what is that noise? Is that the air conditioner? That is loud, man. Yeah, we'll turn it on when we walk out. We got to make sure we turn it on when we leave.
Yeah, I'll turn it on.
So we got this situation that happens, right? The revolution happens, and there's a huge housing shortage before the revolution. So
clarify the
Chinese revolution,
our understanding
1949.
Here.
I'm not a Maoist. We're not Maoists, but this is just a fact about one scenario, what happened. And so in this case, and this was repeated hundreds of thousands of times around the country, one landlord owned these two big apartment buildings. And they came in, the government was doing a housing census and so on. They came in, the new government, the revolutionary government, and they said, you don't need to own these two buildings. We're going to take them for housing for the people. And the guy, but we are going to, you can stay in this one apartment, this big apartment, which was one of them, and we'll give you a pension and you'll have money for life and we'll keep paying you. And the guy accepted, and the landlord, and he was fine. And according to my friend, he was like, he had ties to the community and spent the rest of his life, you know, playing mahjong or whatever, and that was that. And I'll never forget that story because it's kind of the opposite of what, you know,
of where we're taught.
The bourgeois says it was this bloody thing. Well, what was bloody was the society before the revolution. And yeah, I'm not again defending Maoism. They did rotten things, but initially, as far as like, you know, getting back, getting,
so how do you feel
back housing,
now we're talking about these billionaires and stuff, I mean, and enough is not enough. I mean,
well, here's how they end their thing. They say, at a time when the top 0.1% control more wealth than the bottom 90%, this is a union thing, so they're getting a little more radical in their propaganda, at least. The bottom, and I mean that in a good sense, in their information, bottom 90% of Americans, we cannot allow an immensely profitable Fortune 20 company to destroy thousands of good jobs and inflate already outrageous executive pay. We need good jobs, high-quality telecommunications service, and access to high-speed broadband for all. Join picket lines and get the latest about how you can help. www.standuptoverizon.com or call the communication workers in your area.
I had a question for you, Jeff.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
Do you believe in maximum wages? Like you're super rich.
Sure.
There should be a max. You can only make $100,000.
Yeah.
Nobody goes beyond that.
We should have minimum.
It'll have a more structured economy in the sense that you can't go beyond that $100,000. Anything else will basically kind of like how they used to tax the rich. After a certain amount of money, that's all going to be taxed at this high percentage, so that money goes in back to the state or back to the...
We should have a minimum wage, minimum income, per year.
It used to, our program used to be $550 a week, right?
Maybe $50,000 a year, and then a maximum wage of maybe $250,000 a year, something like that. I don't know, that's just off the top of my head. But here's the problem. That, under capitalism, would become a huge struggle. Capitalists wouldn't accept it, which is fine. You still fight for it. And if we could get maybe some of that for a short time. It's like any reform under capitalism. Like, people thought pensions were just normal after a certain point. Mm. Well, they weren't normal up until they started to be negotiated by unions in a big way in the 1930s and 40s. And they were only normal, quote unquote, for about 30 years, right? Then they started to attack them.
In the 60s and the 70s.
Well, maybe 40 years. And then they started to go after them. And now they're unusual and strange. And who has a pension now these days, you know? There's another leaflet I got here. Forget where I got it. Stop Verizon Wireless corporate greed. Verizon CEO makes over 200 times as much as the average Verizon Wireless worker. In addition to getting paid over $18 million per year, Verizon CEO also enjoyed perks like the use of a corporate jet. And Verizon refuses to raise retail workers' pay or to improve benefits by stonewalling negotiations for a fair contract at Verizon Wireless stores in Brooklyn and Massachusetts. So in other words, the union's been going out and organizing these little retail stores. They haven't got all of them organized, as far as I can tell. But they're organizing some. And then, of course, Verizon refuses to negotiate a contract. And that's what happens. People out there are wondering what happens with unions. If you listen to anti-union people, they'll say, unions aren't that popular and they lose votes and so on. No, actually, unions are, in terms of polling data, quite popular. In terms of union votes, they often win the votes, but they often don't get a first contract because there's nothing in labor law that says the company must grant a first contact. It's just that they have to negotiate. So the company pretends to negotiate. The National Labor Relations Board goes along with the pretext, the fantasy that they're really negotiating, and they just drag it out forever, and the union can't get a contract. That's how a lot of retail places, especially, handle unionization these days. They do fight it tooth and nail, but if it gets in, they're like, okay, you won. We're not going to fire everybody. We're just going to let sort of attrition, they'll fire a few people, maybe the ringleaders or whatever, let attrition take its course. Meanwhile, they drag out negotiations, and you see, pretty soon you have a whole workforce that doesn't know anything about the union.
Well, they're scared of it.
The union hasn't been able to spend the resources to keep up with all these little places. That's why, like, if you talk about organizing, like, we got involved in organizing these warehouses that FedEx uses. And I had to really explain and fight hard and never really got through totally that you can't just organize one warehouse. You have to organize everything in a region, practically, to make it so expensive that if they just shut them down, it really wouldn't work. Or if they did, it would really be a blow to the company. Otherwise, they have no problem shutting down one little warehouse.
Because you definitely hit their pockets and like, oh, I don't want to shut that down.
They have to think twice about, or three times, or maybe never do it, shut down an entire region or entire state's warehouses, mm-hmm. you know? But could they shut down one warehouse that you organize somewhere? Absolutely. So if you're going to enter into organizing any kind of industry, not just retail, you need to be thinking big. You can't just be like one little store after another, because they'll just wait you out. They'll just starve you out. There was a Verizon rally.
Well, that's why they're thinking of leaving. I'm talking about Holdchecks leaving England.
Yeah.
Oh, this is a big mistake. Right. They actually have laws here.
They'll try to get
they
back
actually
in.
Have the government on their side.
They'll try to get back in.
You know?
There was a rally last week for Verizon workers. Hopefully there'll be others. I haven't heard the very, very latest for the last 24 hours, but as far as I know, the workers are still on strike. I don't personally see this has to become, to win, in my opinion, to really win a good contract, this has to become like a social issue, a cause that people will support because of the broader things at work about saving jobs and so on, having decent jobs rather than all low-paid jobs, that kind of thing. And I'm not saying one union can handle that, you know. It has to broaden out to other unions, not just CWA and IBEW, but other unions have to get involved directly. Like I said earlier, it has to really be job actions and sympathy strikes and solidarity strikes and all that stuff that's illegal. It's got to happen that way. And then it's got to become so popular that Verizon can't... I mean, the goal should be really to take Verizon under public ownership, and that threaten them with that. Say they don't deserve it. It is regulated somewhat, but that's nothing compared to what needs to happen. These executives making these $18 million salaries, they have no right to exist. We people have a right to decent phone service and decent computer service. Take it under public ownership. They have to have a whole series of demands that really get people behind this.
And you want pay phones back, please.
Ah, yeah, I miss the pay phones.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a thing. There's
at least some.
There's a letter written by a striker here.
At least a couple throughout the every half, hey, remember half
that,
mile.
Remember that thing you were talking about? Quote, and now you want to make these reassignments even worse by sending us with just a few days' notice anywhere from Massachusetts to Virginia for up to 2 months. In other words, the company wants in the contract, they can just send you out to anywhere because they don't want to hire enough people locally for 2 months. That's like, again, that's like being in the army or something. You know, you have no rights. They can't do that. And it's funny, you know, the workers, I mean, I think the union leadership now is trying to do some education. You notice their rhetoric is a little stronger than normally in a situation like this. But I'll tell you, a lot of the workers that I hear on, I see on Facebook and I hear on the radio and so on, they're still not getting what a threat this is. This is like huge, you know, and they have to go big to win. So one guy was like, gee, you know, it's just not the same as it was. The company's being really mean. I might have to go to another carrier. And I thought to this guy, you know, it's a worker. I'm like, are you nuts, guy? Are you going to go to, you're going to go to a non-union workforce? It's going to be even worse. Do you understand what you're saying? You think you're so precious as one worker that the company's not going to use you and abuse you?
Yeah.
They had another guy on there. This guy was great, actually, in a way.
It's like someone told me, you should be happy you got a job right away. I said, listen, I'm not happy.
Why?
I'm still being exploited.
Why should I be happy? The company should be happy I'm making all this value for them. Yep. I'm creating their
especially
wealth.
Especially me in a point of production.
Yeah. I'm only going to be happy when I control my own labor and everyone controls their own labor, not in an individualistic way, but in a collective way. And then we get to keep the wealth we create. Right now, it's all stolen
then,
from
then
us.
Then work has a different character. It's not exploitative. Oh, yeah. It's yeah. different character. Oh, yeah. It's what work.
But this,
I'm not against work. I'm just... I'm against working for someone else.
Hey, working, or, you know, that's the thing. When you're raising kids, you know, you gotta try to get them to work. But I'm gonna tell my son, and I think I already have, work is overrated when it's defined as work for the bosses. This is not a good thing. Most people hate their jobs. They pretend they don't, but they do. They, you know, you sit there at work in the middle of the day and say, I wonder what my son's doing. I'd rather be with him right now. Can I just leave and go do this thing with my son? You know, well, actually, maybe I could, but I'd be sacrificing vacation time, which I need later, you know, to save money on summer camps or childcare and all this other stuff. Anyway,
is that the reason why France has a 6-hour day as opposed to 8?
Well, I'm so glad you mentioned that. Nuit debout, stand up at night or stand up in the night. A big protest movement in France. I don't know the latest over the last 48 hours, but this started off. This was a very interesting thing to show you the difference between America and France, right? The French government, so-called socialist government, ha-ha, not really, says we're going to make these changes in labor law. Now, here, labor law is this kind of, no one knows about it. It's a strange thing off in the distance. Nobody knows about it. In France, it was to attack what you said, the 35-hour work week, even deeper. It's already been attacked, as far as I know, and make it easier to fire people and do all this stuff, really bad stuff. And the unions protested, which was really good, but also political parties on the left protested, but also young people that don't even have jobs yet protested. See, the consciousness is much higher there. It's not because French people are smart or something. It's because
they're politicized.
They have politicized through the having parties to the left of the Democratic Party equivalent. You know, they don't have the Democratic Party in France, but you know what I mean? Like the current leadership, the current government, sorry, Hollande and the so-called Socialist Party, they have parties to the left of that party that are anti-capitalist, that are affiliated to unions. The unions can pull, when they have a strike, they pull out non-union workers through the political parties and through just a general higher consciousness. So you've had youth.
Even non-workers, you've got young, youth, the youth.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Saying, we don't want to go into jobs like the Verizon strike, the Verizon bosses want us to go into. That's not what they're saying in France, obviously, but it's the same thing. They don't want to go into jobs where they can just get fired, where there'll just be temps. All the stuff that American workers
seem to
accept, although it's more complicated than that, obviously. They're forced to accept it. They're not accepting it in France, and they're fighting. And it turned into kind of an Occupy-type thing on top of it. So I don't know if it's still going on, but it's very interesting. It's happening in cities that usually don't see a high level of struggle. It's a very interesting movement, and one that the American labor movement could learn from, absolutely, you know? But what did you? Why did you bring that up originally? You said,
"No." I was just saying, because you were talking about, you know, being at work, saying, "I'd rather be with my kid." Where in France, let's say you can get out at 12 and then have your little 2-hour and then leave at a good time and still have that time with your children.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's changed a lot. That's changed a lot. But what they do have in France that gives you more time with your kids is they do have the 35-hour work week law, however mangled it is now. They do have subsidized child care. So you're not spending all your money or spending all your time trying to avoid that. In other words, like a lot of women in this country have to quit work. You know, like a lot of the pay gap between men and women has to do with the lack of subsidized child care, the lack of free child care. So it turns out that many, many people at Harvard are faced with this in the Boston area, many women at Harvard, that if you want to have a kid, and even if you're married, you realize that the cost of childcare is the equivalent of your yearly wage.
Rent.
Oh. No, your wage. It's that high. It's just so huge. It's like,
oh, it's worse than rent.
Thousands a month. It's almost like half your wage. I won't say your whole entire wage, but like half your wage or whatever. It's worse than rent. So you're like, you do the math and you're like, I will go bankrupt. So I either quit and take care of my kid half time or full time to save money, and we were down to one income if you have a partner, or you are on your own trying to deal with that in various ways. And it's just craziness. It's crazy making. So you have people in this country who are much more agonized about whether they're not going to have children and how to take care of them once they do have them than in other countries like France, where they have subsidized child care, national health care system, etc. Here, everything is you got to pay for everything, even things that should be a human right. And you... And it's just really hard. And all the propaganda in America about family values, what a joke. There's no value here except capitalist values. Greed, exploitation, destruction of the environment. These are the values of the ruling class. They try to make poor people go along with that. Like, I heard this thing on the radio about Appalachia and the collapse of the coal industry to a certain extent, but they still have the coal industry or other industries come in, and they want to exploit the hell out of that beautiful part of the country, you know?
And destroy the environment.
And a lot of the working people there are just like, yeah, whatever, we'll do anything. We don't care if it pollutes the crap out of everything. We just want a
job.
There's
certain areas in Virginia you can't go by there. There's truckers that say, I suffocate from all that stuff that comes out at a certain time.
And there are some workers that take that and they become right wing and they hate the environmental movement and they just want a job no matter what. And there's other workers that see it's an insoluble dilemma. What can I do? I need a job. And it's only socialists that can break through that. Only socialists that will say, no, we'll have a jobs program for jobs, green jobs and other jobs that won't pollute, and you'll get paid and you'll have a job, and screw these companies that want to come in and pollute with fracking and everything else. But unless you're willing to make that argument about a jobs program, public ownership of certain things and all that really advanced, important stuff that gets to the heart of capitalism, right? Then you're screwed. You have no solution for those people. It's always going to be jobs in the environment, jobs in the environment, jobs in the environment, you know? Why don't we talk about your situation now? We could talk a lot more about Sanders. I'll mention one thing about Sanders. Mm-hmm. There is a lot of articles that have come out in the last week about Sanders saying, quote, if Sanders is not the nominee, so this is from Bloomberg. This is from Sanders' campaign manager. Well, he is a Democrat, meaning Sanders. He said he's a Democrat. He's going to be supporting the Democratic nominee, whoever that is. Sanders' campaign manager, Jeff Weaver, told Bloomberg Politics. And then he was asked a follow-up question, but he's a member, meaning Sanders, of the Democratic Party now for life. Yes, he is, Weaver said. Yes, he is. So there's a lot of articles coming out about, because Sanders lost New York, and he's already said this, which is what pisses me off. He's already said he's going to support whoever wins the nomination, including if it's Clinton. He said that like 3 or 4 times in the past, at least. Now they want him to say it more because he's there. They want him to quit, basically. And he's basically saying, so he and his wife and his campaign manager have all said in the last couple of weeks, yes, he will support the nominee. Yes, he will support Clinton if she's the nominee. Yes, he will support the Democratic Party. And he went and...
Instead of supporting Jill Stein.
He endorsed, probably right, most likely right. What he did was he endorsed 3 Democratic politicians a couple weeks ago, said he will help campaign for them, raise money for them, the 3 politicians that are running. And he basically doubled down on this, I will support the party. The way he phrases it is going to be what we're going to hear a crap ton load of in the future until this election is so over. The lesser evil crap, it's going to come back. And Sanders is going to be a big part of that, most likely. And he's going to say, you should support Hillary because anyone's better than Donald Trump or whoever the Republicans come up with. I will not be a spoiler, blah, blah, blah. So Sanders made the huge, huge, crippling to the left, in my opinion, at least initially, mistake of running in the Democratic Party. Not a surprise because he was working with them and so on, but a lot of people on the left thought, oh, this is something new. He's not an establishment candidate. He's a socialist. He's this and that. All wrong. He's a left populist in a long line of left populists. Because he has the socialist label attached to him, doesn't mean we have to go gaga over that and say that's all that counts. It's not all that counts. Essence matters. Actual policies.
What
and
he actually
matters.
Has done is matters. Well,
yeah, he's
know,
not, a
not
move-
done.
He talks about building a movement. He's never built a movement. Like, he'll say the things that will push the buttons of certain left wingers, including, by the way, people in Social Alternative, unfortunately. He'll push the buttons of certain left-wingers with the right statement. Oh, something about socialism, even if it's half-assed and wrong. Something about building movements. And a $15 minimum wage, which he came to late. And then people will be like,
and the Black Lives Matter.
This is great.
He was stagnant on that issue.
Very late on that. So he's like, this is great. This is just what we want. And this raising consciousness. No, it's not. Consciousness was already there for a lot of people, most people. And it's good. Yeah, he's raising $50 an hour. That's very good. But that doesn't mean we buy into him getting elected is going to solve that or anything else. It's not. He's going to be part of the Democratic Party machine. Anyway, another one from Politico, Bernie Sanders to stay a Democrat for life and support Clinton if she is the nominee. It's kind of the same interviewing his campaign manager. Black Agenda Report is good stuff on, like some people call Bernie Sanders' campaign a movement. I don't agree with that. I don't like that. I think it's a political electoral campaign. A movement is something where people have some decision-making power in. They have lots of things that they have something clear they're fighting for rather than just getting someone elected. You know, Sanders is not a movement. Anyway, Black Agenda Report, stuff like that. Don't have time to go into it. Anyway, and then you see the liberals really coming out this last week or last couple of weeks doing a huge thing about Sanders, you know, really has to support the Democratic Party or has to support Clinton, you know, or else it's going to be a disaster. Jeffrey St. Clair, who's one of the main editors of Counterpunch, writes an article worth checking out. Bernie Sanders, the candidate who came in from the cold from April 22nd, counterpunch.org, and really good points in here. Let's see. Let me see if I can get a quick quote out of this one. I should have prepared this before the show, but didn't have time. What Sanders and his Sandinistas could have done was to take the rotten hulk of the Democratic Party down with them. I don't know what he's referring to exactly.
Sandinistas?
But that was never in the cards. Why? For starters, many of Sanders' top advisors, this is what I want to get out, such as Tad Devine, T-A-D-D-A-V-I-N-E, are Democratic Party loyalists who will certainly want jobs in other Democratic Party campaigns in the next election cycle. Now, this is a point I made way, way back. I found out that in New Hampshire, Sanders was using some really old veterans of, like, even the Dukakis campaign going way back. Kerry, he's using the old Democratic Party network, supposedly as an outsider, quote-unquote, to run his campaign. You know? That's not an outsider at all. More pressingly, although Bernie talks about political revolution, he's really a reformer. His goal is to refashion the Democratic Party from the inside. In this respect, Sanders is an old-fashioned liberal, not a revolutionary socialist. No surprise there. His entire political life testifies to his liberal incrementalism. The man has been elected in the elected office since 1981, tweaking at the gears instead of monkey wrenching the machine. If Sanders now seems like a radical, it is only a measure of how far to the right the Democrats have migrated since the rise of the neoliberals. Sanders may be as good as a Democrat gets, aside from Barbara Lee, whatever that means, by the way. But how good is that? And what will it get you? Single-payer health care? Nationalization of the banks? Abolition of nuclear weapons? Dream on. More and more of this vaunted, quote-unquote, movement seems to be little more than a movable feast, which follows Sanders around like a swarm of postmodern deadheads from venue to venue to hear the senator deliver the same tepid stump speech he's been warbling on about for the last 8 months. In the end, Bernie Sanders proved to be an unconventional candidate running a fairly conventional campaign in the Dean 2004/Obama 2008 mold. This leads rise to the suspicion that the Sanders movement is mostly about the glorification of Bernie Sanders. What might a real movement have done? Now, this is a part I love about this article. If Sanders could turn 30,000 people out for a pep rally in Washington Square Park, why couldn't he have had a flash mob demonstration mustering half of that many fervent supporters to shut down Goldman Sachs for a day? If he could lure 20,000 hipsters to the Rose Garden in Portland, why couldn't he turn out 10,000 Sandinistas to bolster the picket lines of striking Verizon workers? Now, he went there personally and people thought that was a big deal. No, I've seen that Democrats go there personally to picket lines. It doesn't mean anything unless you mobilize real support.
Unless I've gone to one of those pickets.
No,
a
I'm talking
years
I'm talking
ago.
About people. Mm-hmm. No, individual people's great. But if you're a politician supposedly representing something like a so-called movement or a party and you go show up alone, that's a sin. All right? So that's what he's saying. He says Sanders could draw these people that are in his campaign out to these things and he doesn't even try. If Sanders could draw 15,000 people in Austin, Texas, why couldn't his movement bring 5,000 people to Huntsville to protest executions at the Texas Death House? If Sanders could draw 18,000 people to a rally in Las Vegas, why couldn't he just as easily have led them in a protest at nearby Creech Air Force Base, the center of operations for U.S. Predator drones? Oh, strike that. Sanders supports Obama's killer drone program. My bad. But if you get that point. But you get the point. Instead of being used as stage props, why hasn't Sanders put his teeming crowds of eager Sandinistas to work doing the things that real movements do? Blocking the sale of foreclosed house in Baltimore, disrupting a fracking site in rural Pennsylvania, shutting down the entrance to the police torture chamber at Holman Square in Chicago for a day, intervening between San Diego cops and the homeless camp they seek to evict. Why? Because that's not who Bernie Sanders is, and that's not what his so-called movement is about. Ultimately, Bernie Sanders is a loyalist to liberalism. Pretty good stuff. I've been saying that. People don't care or don't believe me. And this is Bernie Sanders, the candidate who came in from the cold, by Jeffrey St. Clair and Counterpunch. Excellent stuff. So you're back. You're back. And yeah. you had the capitalist crap thrown at you.
The whole check, the whole thing.
So you worked at Whole Paycheck, Whole Foods, for how many years?
5 years.
5 years.
2010.
And so we had talked on the show before, they were harassing you about sick time. And that's what led to
it
eventually.
I'm asthmatic, and I get it. I get triggers,
yep.
You know.
Yep.
And I have this. They have this system, which I also started knowing how to manipulate. And I guess they probably go, so they already had me at a final because I accumulated so many, and they look at the history and they say, well, you were out so many, you know, days. And I said, well, they're all documented. You can even call the doctors. You can even look it up. All the notes are there. You know. And this happened prior to what was something else. And they basically said, here's your final.
And you mean final warning?
Final warning. Yep. After this, if I accumulate after a certain amount, you know, if I accumulate 2 points in a month, that's it. You're gone. You know, you're terminated from the company forever. Blah, blah, blah. Like, a week later, I was frustrated because of the workload that we've been getting, because we've lost the a couple of the buyers, some people getting already laid off from 2015 on September. They did the nationwide layoff. It was 1,600.
Yep. You survived that?
Yes, because I was not part of any kind of, you know, management or anything like that. They got rid of the bulk buyers. They got rid of frozen buyers. So now we have to do bulk. We have to do that frozen. And, basically, you can see where this is leading to, where basically the workload for Diego, for instance, because goes up times three. And everybody else in the shift times three. But then you have a few of the people that just get by, skim it, and don't kind of like workers that know not to work as hard, I guess. And I was frustrated one Sunday, and you know how Sundays get in markets. You know, everybody's buying, you know, on a weekend. Like, for instance, you, Jeff. I mean, you buy most of your groceries on Sunday because it's a weekday. You're busy.
Just when I want to be home, I'm out.
You're out buying, earrings or whatever.
Yeah, spending all my...
Heavy day and everything. And I see, you know, as soon as I come in, I know what needs to get done. I know I can see the juices are blown out. Like, in other words, they're gone. This needs to be filled. So the supervisor, who I thought was a good guy, Haitian, you know, me and him talked about, you know, he goes, Diego, we need a front now. And I said, well, I'm going to do this because this is beat up and everything. And I got frustrated because, you know, he's telling me, well, I'm the boss and this is what we're going to do and that's it. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to take a 5-minute break right now, if you don't mind. I did, just to calm down, breathe, you know. Then I came back. They pulled me to the office, the one in charge. Hey, do you have a problem with blah, 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 such and such, the supervisor? I said, no, I don't. I just don't like being told things when I've been here for 5 years, when I know this is priority. I could have gotten that done and moved on and helped out with the rest of the team. You have plenty of people here. Basically, you know, you're going to make my life more hectic. I know what needs to get done to make my life easier later on when that truck comes in and I need to unload, you know, goes in one ear, out the other, whatever. I guess it probably went down a report. That whole day, I didn't talk to him. That whole night, I was just doing what I needed to do. At the end of the night, as we're, finishing up the shift, and I'm facing, he comes up to me and says, Diego, you need to check that attitude. Then that's when you kind of light the matches. And I said, what? What attitude? I didn't say a word to you all night. I'm doing my work. I'm doing the work for three. I just went on and on and on. You know what? this thing continues this way, I'm going to basically start looking for something else, something better, whatever. You know what I mean? I got really upset, and I told him, and after that, I'll be putting in my 2 weeks' notice. I didn't say I put in my 2 weeks' notice. I said I would be putting in my two weeks' notice. He went ahead and emailed or whatever he did so that the next day on Monday, they called me in an hour into the shift. All right. I'm already been productive for an hour or exploited for an hour into the shift before I got called into that office. And then they told me, oh, did you put in your 2 weeks' notice? Well, according to him, he did. Well, I'm going to take that as a verbal. I said, wait a minute. Isn't the 2 weeks' notice you write a letter saying, hey, here's my last 2 weeks. I resigned. Oh, no, but nobody does that. 95% of the, you know, it's verbal. I'm going to send you home today, you know, dot, dot, dot. She sends me home.
Did you just say, no, I'm not quitting in 2 weeks?
No, I'm not quitting. I told her I'm not quitting. Did you not say that? I said, no, I did not say that. I said, I'm thinking about it.
It was a hypothetical, yeah.
It was a hypothetical thing. Right. But they went with it. I know where they're going.
Yep.
They got me in a trap where they can just get away with it. Well, he quit. You know, he didn't get fired. I was off on the 12th and the 13th. They called me on the 12th, which was Tuesday, January 12th. Can you come in? She needs to talk to you, blah, blah, blah. You know, give the decision whether we'll be there or not anymore. And I said, well, right now I'm not in town. It was my day off. I can go tomorrow, which is 13th.
Yep.
And I go in around 4, blah, 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 sit down. And I'm talking about management here. You got two management, the lower management, and her. I'm like between wolves, you know?
Yeah.
It really feels like, you know, oh, my God.
And you're non-union, so you can't have a union rep.
So I'm like in the middle between capitalist wolves here and the pig right in front of me.
Yeah.
Saying, you know, with your little manila folder there. And
some places they have a security guard there, too, for that kind of meeting.
No, then they act security-like. When they basically let me go and said, you know, I'll empty your locker, blah, 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 give us back, you know, whatever, you know, that card, you know, that you clock in and get your discounts.
Yeah.
She ripped that up right away. Snip, snip. They walked me out like I was a criminal.
Oh, there you go. That's what I was talking about.
They walked me out. Yep. Oh, I'm sorry. This is protocol. I have to walk you out.
Bullshit.
So if I wanted to stick around and buy something or talk to my coworkers,
we want to
walk you out. Like I just, like I robbed somebody. Like I did something wrong. Like I'm a criminal.
Right.
Like I'm a virus. And literally on the stand it says right there, you've been separated. Like I'm a virus. Like I'm going to be contagious. Like I'm going to go and knock down a couple end caps on my way out, you know? Really?
Right.
How is that going to serve me in my favor?
Have you seen anyone else go through that, by the way?
All the time.
That's what happens a lot.
Yeah. I've seen a guy, Sean, a friend of mine, he was a supervisor. He got let go the same way, and they walked him out. And he did the other thing where he just like, no, I'm going to buy. Hey, you don't mind. I'm buying. I didn't do anything wrong. You know, no, you need to leave now. Like if he was a criminal right in front of the customers and everything.
So I know this. I know we know the answer to this, but I just want to get the question out. So why can't, if this is happening all the time, why doesn't anyone talk to anybody else? Why is there such a lack of solidarity? That's non-union workplace. We know that. That's the biggest reason, obviously.
Because everybody's scared. And it's non-union.
Yeah, everyone's scared.
Nobody's pro-union. Well, now it's a consciousness. I was starting to go up after the layoffs. All of a sudden, that's a favorable thing. People are starting. Remember I told you after that layoff? Yeah. Now that the U word is not as, all of a sudden everybody's like, I remember last show you was talking about how sometimes you don't get things out of the point of view right away. Sometimes it's through experience people learn, and slowly and surely maybe they won't agree with you today, but then tomorrow because of what's going on, they say, wait a minute, that guy did have a point.
Well, people also have to be confident that they can win a struggle too, and the labor movement gets to the point where it's perceived as being so weak that nobody has confidence it can win anymore. You know, that's a big problem. People have to understand. People have to hear of the victories, like Stop and Shop workers. I don't know if they ended up with a concessionary contract or not. But if it's not a concessionary contract, they should be publicizing the fact that they almost went on strike. They went around and mobilized their members. They had rallies, and then they got a contract. You know, and everyone should know about that, including Whole Paycheck, Whole Foods workers. In fact, I would say the union should go around like Stop and Shop, and they should leaflet Whole Foods, even if they don't feel like they can jump into an organizing drive tomorrow,
it's another
they
reason
should do
why.
It now.
Just it's another reason why the workers here are not unified. There was they have a food truck from the store that I'm at, and they service over here by the Science Center in Harvard. You probably have seen them there on a Tuesday or whatever. And one day I'm walking by, you know, this is my job search. I'm doing this job search. I'm walking around Harvard Square like a nomad, trying to get anything. So I just kind of go through there on my way to go to Tom's. He wasn't there at the time, but I just, you know. And then I seen the truck, and I said hi to one of my, you know, he was a coworker that worked with me, that he's in the kitchen. But there's another lady there, and then I started getting into the guy in JP that got let go. And she goes, oh, that you know, that a-hole? Yeah, he deserved what he got, you know, that kind of thing. He really deserved to get let go because he wanted a dollar raise. I'm thinking to myself, why should I said it? Yeah. I didn't care. At this point, I don't care.
Right.
I'm going to push you right on there, you know.
Lack of solidarity. Also, I mean, I get
so this is a kind of
also you
work
told me,
environment
yeah.
that I'm dealing
well,
with.
Well, you told me before that people tend to have the everyone for themselves attitude. They don't hang out after work or stuff like that, you know? Yeah.
Duck their head in the sand like the ostrich when everything gets tough.
I mean, there's a guy that you probably heard the name before. We gotta get ready in case another show comes in here in about 5 minutes. But Tony Mizaki, who was one of the leaders of that labor party effort in the 90s, he used to talk about like the fragmentation of working class communities, where like when he was growing up and stuff, people would organize. He called it over the back fence. You know, like you would talk to your neighbors about the union and unions and stuff. And there's a lot of organic sort of community organizing going on for unions. Right? And that doesn't seem to happen anymore. Like people are so alienated and so separate. I'm not saying there's no way around this. There is. There's a lot of ways around it, but it takes a lot of effort, a lot of resources. People don't tend to do that anymore. I mean, like, it sounds like you didn't have anybody you could say, you could, like, call that night or meet with the next day and say, I got fired. This is unfair, you know?
Technically, as far as they're concerned, I didn't get fired. They're honoring my 2 weeks.
Doesn't matter. No, that's not what I mean.
So they're going by.
Doesn't matter. That's a technicality. You know what happened. So what I'm saying, I'm making a different point. I'm just saying, like, well, where's the solidarity for someone who just got fired? You worked there 5 years. You knew a lot of people. It sounds like nobody. And I'm not saying it's your fault. Yeah. I'm just saying, you don't develop kind of the workplace camaraderie that you need and social cohesion that you need. That's part of union organizing. You know. And that's something that unions have to deal with now. And in political parties, the social alternative has to deal with that. I mean, everybody has to deal with that, wants to change society. Capitalism creates such alienation and brainwashes people into thinking they're totally on their own. And what's happening to them is their little situation when it's happening to tons of people all the time. The day you got fired, how many tens of thousands of other workers across the country got fired that same day?
Well, a week later, my boss got fired.
Yeah. Oh, that's the Verizon strike, the story I want to tell you. There was a manager that called that radio show. He said, this guy was, of course, a moron in a lot of ways, but he's like, good for you, Miles. That's the union guy. Keep it up. Because I used to be a manager of Verizon. My ears perked up. A manager? And I bet they let his call through because they thought he was going to be anti-union. He goes, I'm all for the strike because when I was a manager, I was told to lay off all my people. And over the years, I laid off all my people. Or I didn't say over the years. I added that. But I think there was like a time frame. I don't know what it was. I laid off all my people. And then there was no one left to supervise, so they laid me off. And that's what I love about these you know, supervisors are mostly cops for management. They don't have any, they have this power over, management creates a hierarchy of power.
That's why I never wanted it.
And it's
every time it came up to me,
but look what
why
you
don't
have.
You become a supervisor?
Look what you have when you're supervisor. You got nothing. You don't have crap. You just told me about a supervisor that got fired. I heard on the radio about this
manager. The grocery department.
Manager gets fired. After you lays everybody off, now what do these idiots do? Do they these supervisors, these managers? They just internalize it and say that's the way it is, or do they learn something from it? This guy at least learned a little bit. He learned to be pro union, at least in terms of Verizon. You know?
Well, and then the technicality got me hurt because I'm still pending that unemployment. So this whole time, the only reason I got through was because of I took that 401k money right away with a penalty. I don't care. I need
that's
that money.
Horrible. Yeah.
I got the. My income tax come in right away. That helped me out.
Yeah.
I with that money, I was able to pay 3 months in advance of my rent, so I have peace of mind, even though I don't have this.
The landlord accepted that?
Right away. Oh, yeah, I told him. I told him I got laid off. I didn't say I got, you know, hey. Yeah. You know, I gave him the money. He's like, oh, okay, that's man, good luck. I'm sorry, whatever. Yeah. You go to Bermuda with your money anyway. And that was basically it. I'm still pending.
Yeah,
I'm still, like, calling them up, trying to get in there, like, what's going on? Yes, no, can I fight it? Can I appeal it?
Yeah.
He didn't say a word afterwards.
Is this unemployment or the company?
Unemployment.
Yeah.
Oh, because they said you quit. And I said, no, I didn't. You know?
Well, you know, I got to
They're taking their word. They always take their word.
I know. You know?
Their rules are always favored them.
I used to be a paralegal doing unemployment law, and they always favor management unless you're. I learned a couple tricks that got some cases won, but if they're really serious about it, I mean, I got most of my cases won by doing a simple trick. Each hearing gets taped.
Yep.
The little bureaucrats they have judging those hearings are idiots, and they're usually biased towards managers, like you're saying, towards the companies. So they'll put out this verbiage in this form of a decision that's not almost inevitably not backed up by any evidence. This is supposed to be some sort of court-like proceeding, and they'll just pontificate about how, you know, their pro-business attitudes in various ways. And it turns out none of that judgment about how the worker performed or whatever is in evidence. There's no corroborating evidence. There isn't even testimony to that effect. So I would just listen to the tape, which was time-consuming. I listen to the tape, and I would write that this isn't supported by evidence, this is not supported by evidence.
And you would win on that basis.
And we would win, because it would go to a higher thing. If the person had the patience, it would go to a higher thing. And they would say there's no they almost had no choice if they were going to maintain the fiction of a judicial process, and they would say there's no evidence supporting any of this, except when the bosses got really freaking serious about it. One time I represented an MBTA driver that got accused of smoking pot on the job, and it was much more complicated than that. I don't think he really did, and if he did, he was definitely off the job, and they just sort of smelled it, so they had no corroborating evidence. This time, though, they showed up with three lawyers. It was the MBTA, and the hearing examiner, you could just see, was like shaking in his boots. And when I appealed that one, they didn't care. They were shaking in their boots, too, the appeals people, because it was the MBTA, and it was three lawyers and all that. So that went through, again, without any evidence. This guy ended up homeless, as far as I know. I mean, he had nothing. And there's, you know, in Massachusetts, if you're a single adult male between 18 and 47, last I knew, you entitled you to nothing except maybe food stamps, and they keep cutting that.
Which I entitled, I'm entitled.
But you can't get, like, aid to failures of dependent children.
Which I'm still waiting. I'm like, where's my card? Yeah, I'm worth $194, but where's my card?
Right.
I can't go to a shopping shop or whatever and say, I'm worth $194, just put it on my tab, you know?
Yep, exactly. So, anyway, we're running out of time here. If another show comes in, we're going to get our song cut off, but it's called Lost in the Supermarket by The Clash. It's dedicated to Diego and all the crap.
Oh, really?
Thank you. It's a good song. So, Diego, I hope you can come to the next show. Thanks, everyone, for listening to Socialist Alternative Radio every other Sunday, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. here at WMFO Medford. That's WMFO in Medford. Also known as Tufts Educational Radio, Tufts Freeform, commercial-free, community-based radio. And enjoy the music.
Personality.